Hi, Dan here. I was one of the producers of the first season of the Collapsing Horse Science Fiction Radio Hour. Some of you may know that Collapsing Horse, the theatre company that commissioned these pieces of radio, closed up shop at the end of last year. The coronavirus had not yet been discovered, but because of our predilection for speculative fiction, we had a bit of an insider track. So, with all of the recent world upending wartime, let's pull together authoritarian state against a mysterious deadly virus for which we don't yet have the cure, got me thinking. It might be a good time to rerun some of these science fiction stories from the Storykeeper's vaults. I also want to let you know that you can now support the show via Patreon. Before Collapsing Horse collapsed, it paid for the commissioning, production and hosting costs of these podcasts. Now it's just me. So anything you can throw towards the project will help keep the lights on. And the more we get in, the more new episodes and shows we can make. And hopefully, like the characters in many of these stories, we can fumble in the dark for the zipper of effective human communication, driven by the desirous adolescent confusion of a future that's arrived really quite suddenly. Go to patreon.com/DMC Radio or find the link in the show description. Now, over to the Storykeeper.
Ow!
Silence! I am the Storykeeper. This is the Collapsing Horse Science Fiction Radio Hour. You are standing in my expansive den, and yes, I'd really rather you took your shoes off. Today's story from my impressive collection is entitled Everything is Always Harder Than It Seemed and is written by Dylan Coben Gray. This story is concerned with communication. What categories of knowledge can or cannot be transmitted between beings, and what relationship, if any, does the possession of such knowledge have on one's capacity to just not act like a big dickhead? Please prepare your minds for a shift in gear as we delve into an ocean of wordplay, conceptual fantasy, and a truly commendable restraint on fish puns, for everything is always harder than it seemed.
There have been myths about magical fish for centuries. The Irish had the salmon of knowledge, the taste of which bestows infinite learning. Americans had the cod of laconic cool, of which the smallest lick results in the ability to look good while walking away from explosions. The English had the turbot of historical obliviousness, one bite in which instills in the biter the belief that Cromwell was basically an okay guy. A second bite leaves them forever unsure whether Ireland is or has ever been an independent country. So, given that every country has had its own fish since time out of mind, isn't it strange that science has only recently harnessed the very real power of the very real magic fish in our oceans? Of course, as Albert Einstein once said,
the hardest part of solving any problem is knowing what the problem is. Don't stop, Emmy, just like that. Okay, I'm finished. You can untie me.
And he was right! Science had to take the idea of magic fish seriously before we could benefit from their awesome powers. Just think where we'd be without the cod of restoring the cod population after overfishing fucked it. Or the blenny of infinite eco-friendly electricity. Or the guppy of affordable rent in urban centers. I mean, life wouldn't be worth living in a world where these problems were still problems. We owe the crypto-ichthyo-utopia we live in to the work of one woman, Dr. Gwendolyn Gill. Let's join her, along with her postdoctoral supervisor, Professor Lemon Bravely, on their historic hunt for the salmon of knowledge. The year is 1960. Skirts are short, hair is big. Blues guitar has literally just been invented by white British men. In a submarine, thousands of feet deep, hundreds of miles from everywhere, Professor Lemon is saying,
Gwen, it's been 6 months. I can smell my own face.
It gets easier when your senses shut down in disgust. Look, I'm eating this tub of gone-off yogurt and I'm barely gagging.
Gwen, that's the plaque I scraped off my teeth last night while I was checking if I have scurvy. And I do. I have scurvy. So much scurvy. I'm more scurvy than man. Scurvy has me.
I mean, do you need your gums? Like, need?
The university were clear. Results in 3 months or bye-bye funding. And we failed. As my wife said when I set up a department for the study of mythical fish in the first place, let's just stop trying. It'll be such a relief. We don't even need to divorce. We can just start swinging. And she was right. Giving up is such a relief.
That's a load of penis cow ass chocolate, Professor.
Not to mention you're still recovering from that head injury that causes you to forget words occasionally.
I'm getting anti-worse at around wording.
True. And things could have gone so much worse given the stupidly fucking huge squid is the most dangerous predator in the ocean. But still, you need rest. At home.
Look, Professor Bravely, wasn't it Albert Einstein said, the fight isn't over until you've won. Go slowly, Emmy. It's my first time taking something this big. Okay, I'm finished. You can untie me now.
It'd be different if you could still operate the fish-finding computer and actually track the salmon of knowledge, Gwen. But that's another thing you've forgotten since bumping your head, right?
No.
I may be an old, unlovable, computer-illiterate scurvy with a mild case of man, but even I know you don't operate a computer by sitting at it and saying, pute, pute, pute.
Shit.
You need to go home.
No, what I need is to find the fish, more than ever. One lick and I'll know all the talk breaks I'm unthinking. One lick and I can use the computer again.
Well, unless that stupid fucking fish swims headfirst into the sub, we're not going to. Seriously?
Can it be?
It fucking is, and on. Let me in.
We can't, unless we surface.
Well, then it's as clear as the fucking baby Jesus piss waiting to do, isn't it? See you up top.
Can it be?
I mean, at the very least.
Yeah?
It's something that can talk underwater.
Finally. Name's Brad.
And are you...
The salmon of knowledge. No, I'm the other fucking talking salmon who can tell you not to get too attached to JFK.
What?
It'll make loads of sense in 3 years.
What are the chances?
It's not chance. I'm the fucking salmon of fucking knowledge. I know where to find everything all the time. Except the clitoris. And that's not a bad joke about men being bad at sex. It's just because ladyfish don't have them at all. Shit one.
We don't mean you any harm.
I know.
We're researchers hoping to bring credibility to the field of cryptoichthyology.
Yeah, I know.
And if you were happy to answer some questions, it would really help us out.
Yeah, I fucking know. So do you want a lick or not?
What?
Well, we can chat more about me if you want. Understandable, I'm class. Or you can just have a lick and you'll know more about me than my fucking mother. Not that that's hard. We're not close. She wasn't around when I was a kid.
Oh, now?
Now or fucking never, girl. Lick me.
Wow. Okay, that's sudden and intimate. I feel like I should buy you a drink first or something.
I don't drink.
Because you're a fish?
Because my body's a fucking temple and you should feel lucky to lick it. So lick me.
Oh, God.
Fucking lick me, you fucking coward.
I'll lick him.
How do you feel?
Well, I...
Professor Bravely?
Bananas feel pain.
Oh. God, what's wrong with him?
Nothing's wrong with him. He's just knowing things.
He's spasming and muttering.
Yeah, because he has infinite knowledge now. Declarative knowledge, anyway. Because I'm the salmon of declarative knowledge. I should have mentioned that sooner.
Selfies are a life form and we are their genes.
Declarative knowledge being things you're aware that you know, like that bananas feel pain. But obviously, you can't be aware of an infinite number of things at the same time or your brain would explode. So your brain has to scan through the infinite things you know to find the particular thing you want to be aware of. In this case, how he feels, because that's what you asked him. It might take him a while.
Well, how long?
Well, if you're lucky, then you might find the thing you want to know quickly. Say 10 minutes or 10 years.
10 years?
Well, 10 years is pretty quick compared to an infinitely long time. Most of the time, it takes an infinitely long time. In fact, the chances of it not taking an infinitely long time is infinitely small.
So everyone who licks you...
spasms and mutter until they starve to death. I definitely should have mentioned that sooner.
Oh, Professor Bravely, this is all my fault.
Cats are just sad dogs.
It is all your fault. And coming from me, you know that's objectively true.
Why do you get to know things without spasming and muttering?
Because I licked the tardigrade of indexed search functionality before I licked myself. His name's Kevin, good pal of mine, tiny fella. Had a bit of a rough patch there. Bad breakup. Doing much better now.
The tardigrade of what?
So you know how Google finds things real quick, but searching your hard drive is really slow?
No.
Oh, that'll make loads of sense in 30-odd years. You know how consulting the index of a book is faster than searching page by page?
Yes.
Basically, that. If you lick Kevin, you can know most things pretty much instantly.
So if Professor Bravely licks Kevin, he'll stop muttering and spasming?
You got it.
Oh, did you hear that, Professor Bravely? I'm going to save you.
Humans only use 10% of their skin.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like he's knowing everything from a parallel universe. Not even a good one. I hate that one. It's not going to be 10 minutes. What?
Nothing.
What? Fucking tell me. I hate that passive-aggressive bullshit.
I just thought Magic Fish would solve problems for us, not make more.
I mean, we do. But it's not my fucking problem if what you thought was the fucking problem is actually like 5 different problems. Like what? You only want infinite knowledge if it works the way you kind of sort of reckon it should. You pull your head out of your hole.
Okay, then. Can you tell me where Kevin the Tardigrade is?
As Albert Einstein once said, no can do. Sit on that cake like a good girl there, Emmy.
I thought you could find anything anytime.
Yeah, but Kevin swims so fast that by the time you get to where he was, he's gone.
Can't you go to where you know he's going to be?
Yeah, but most of the time he swims by so fast he doesn't even notice you.
So how are you friends then?
Oh, I'm from college. He went out with Lisa. Tuna Lisa. She's a tuna. That was actually the bad breakup I mentioned.
I meant, forget it. Can you help me at all?
Well, I could instruct you on using that fish finding computer of yours to message Kevin. I can't do it myself, though. No hands. Fucking evolution, man.
Fuck!
What?
I took an angry kiss to the meat balloon during an encounter with a stupidly fucking huge spaghetti wolf, and now I can't remember how to operate the computer.
Oh, no bother. Ruth will sort you out.
Who's Ruth?
Ruth is the octopus of procedural knowledge. Good pal of mine. Used to live together. We had this bit where we'd pretend to be humans, like, oh, look at me. I have hair on a mortgage. Huh? No? No? You had to be there. Anyway, drink her ink and you'll know how to do everything.
Everything.
Oh yeah, ride a bike, make a souffle, live without you. All knowledge that isn't declarative knowledge.
So let's go.
One problem.
Of course.
Ruth's an octopus. She lives at the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, no problem. This is a deep diving sub.
In a labyrinthine series of canyons full of big fuck-off eels who will wake up if they hear your engine.
Spotted or great big fuck-off eels?
Oh yeah, great big fuck-off eels.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Okay, so we stay ahead of them and never backtrack.
One problem.
Of course.
The whole area is highly volcanic. The canyons move. So the route is different every time.
So you direct me to where she's going to be?
One problem.
Of course.
Plotting a route through thousands of canyons that never doubles back on itself so you don't get eaten by great big fuck-off eels is actually an NP-complete problem called the Hamiltonian path problem.
What?
Basically, there are problems that even the fastest computers can't solve within the lifetime of a universe. So my brain can't either because the index doesn't help. I know the answer, but it takes me an infinite amount of time to know it. And I end up like your friend there.
North is just east when it's angry.
Fuck.
But the good news is that Rootscaff is right beside the Queen Mab of the Crab's Fab Crab Computer, and Queen Mab of the Crab's Fab Crab Computer runs a sexy little algorithm that can plot us a route.
Queen
Mab of the Crab's Fab Crab Computer.
Yeah,
it's a computer made of crabs.
Yeah, great.
And it's fab. Belongs to Queen Mab. Less said about her, the better.
Okay, so we go to this fab crab computer.
In order to find Root, the octopus of procedural knowledge.
In order for me to relearn how to use the computer.
So we can message Kevin the Tardigrade of index search functionality.
To tell him to come fix Professor Bravely before he starves to death.
Exactly.
This is so much more labour intensive than I thought problem solving with magical fish would be.
Again, not my fucking problem that you don't know enough to know what the problem is. Move out of the way so I can hop into that aquarium there. You steer, I give directions.
Aye, aye, Brad.
And I'll tell you a story to pass the time.
One long and deeply unfunny story later.
Oh, God! Oh. That punchline I just said would be hilariously random to someone who hadn't heard the preceding story.
It looks like a maze. An amazing maze. It's so huge, I can't even see the edge.
The crab computer. Oh, yeah, 200 miles each side.
All those channels carved into stone. It looks like God's thumbprint or something.
God does exist, but doesn't have thumbs. Objective truth.
And look, there go some crabs. Oh, there's so many. How many are there?
Shitload. Saying the actual number takes a long time and is boring.
So those crabs in that channel encode a 1 or a 0.
And the junctions are logic gates that turn input into output.
So by moving through the maze, they compute. Their channel just joined up with another. That's an OR gate, right?
Whose benefit is this for?
Are you seeing this, Professor Bravely?
Bees are just wasps viewed from above.
We're on our way. We'll have you back on your feet in no time.
Steer towards the enormous air bubble, and inside, that's where Mab's palace is.
Looks like a totally normal rock to me.
Oh, we don't have hands, okay?
Welcome to Queen Mab of the Crab's Fab Crab Computer! I'm Queen Mab, and... oh, you're a human. Hello, human. How are your hair and your mortgage?
Mab.
Oh, and Brad is here too.
You know each other?
We used to date. Knew it wouldn't last. He always has to be right, and he's bizarrely racist towards narwhals, even by the standards of our time in the 1960s, in case anyone forgot.
I am always right, and I hate their culture, not them. Hating the way narwhals treat their women isn't racist.
Funny. I suppose I thought instant access to unlimited information would make that kind of irrational prejudice impossible.
He's very good at ignoring truth that doesn't suit him.
Well, that has depressing implications for the idea that racism will die out in the future as cultures interact.
Genuinely depressing.
Mab, we need to go see Ruth.
Simplest spaceflight. Crabs!
Queen Mab!
Chart a Hamiltonian path to Ruth the Octopus of procedural knowledge.
We'll have a snack!
And for the next 2 weeks, while they're computing, Queen Mab will entertain you because Queen Mab's hands are a dab, a non-drab tablum gab. I don't have hands, but, you know.
2 weeks.
Of course 2 weeks. Our computer runs a very efficient algorithm, but it processes using crabs instead of electricity, and crabs do not move at light speed. It's unfair to expect crabs to move at light speed. We don't have hands.
But we don't have 2 weeks. Professor Bravely is starving to death. Look at him.
Gwen Stefani is the plural.
Oh. I see. Well, I could task some crabs to put some healthy slabs of flab back on him. See if they can't get him to take some food sliced up real small. You know, with their claws. To be clear, we don't have hands.
Really?
Of course. Crabs.
Queen Mab.
Look after this human until his friend comes back with Kevin the Tardigrade of index search functionality.
We've run out of ad words.
See you soon, Professor. Yeah.
Technically, they're not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles unless they're from the Teenage Mutant Ninja region in France.
And now to wait. Banana daiquiri?
100 banana daiquiris, 2 tense weeks, and 1 terrifying escape from thousands of great big fuck-off eels later.
Why does Ruth even live in this cave?
Because they're too small for great big fuck-off eels to get into.
I meant, why doesn't she just live somewhere where there aren't any... oh, forget it!
Aim for the big air bubble. That's where Ruth's studio is.
Studio?
Oh yeah, she's a fine art printmaker. Her stuff's gorgeous. Visceral. Kinetic. Did a show at Warhol just there. God, I love her. She's so cool. Just can't wait to see her.
Hello?
Ruth, you big mollusk. It's good to see you. With your 3 layers of skin that change colour. This is a true and interesting fact about octopuses.
Brad, good to see you. And a human. I love your hair. Can I touch your hair?
Oh, actually, I prefer... oh, yeah, that's ticklish.
So soft.
Long story short, she's hurt her brain, forgot how to computer, and forgets words.
Most of the clock coordinate, I'm a boreful unless I what lenses do on it.
Needs some ink so she can use her computer to call Kevin so he can help a friend of hers.
Ink is no problem. Does Kevin really have to come here?
Ah, come on, Ruth. Just like old times.
Whatever. Human, Open your mouth.
Oh, well, bye.
Oh my God, so much of it. I still can feel.
In octopus culture, we're married now.
Did it work?
Go see.
One annoyingly straightforward computer operation later.
Oh, Kevin! Ah, fuck you too, Kevin, man. You're a gas cunt, you fucking dick-munching dick. You fucking Oranobus.
Hi, Kevin.
The old gang, back together. Yeah, plus some fucking human with her hair and her mortgage.
I don't actually have a mortgage.
Sure you do. Humans fucking love mortgages. Here, Kevin, let me explain the sitch outside while you have a totally non-sexual wrestle like friends do.
So, think.
Don't feel the need to make small talk. I don't get uncomfortable unless I'm eating something large, and even then it's only because my brain is wrapped around my throat. This is a true and interesting fact about octopuses.
Okay.
Though, if you're uncomfortable not making small talk, go ahead. I won't be uncomfortable. Same reason again.
Brad was excited to see you.
For about 5 minutes.
Whoa.
What?
That's a bit...
negative?
Yeah.
I know Brad too well to be flattered by him.
He's been very helpful to me.
Only because it costs him nothing and makes him feel good about himself. The second he no longer feels good, he'll be gone.
That's so harsh.
Trust me, I've seen it again and again. What do you think happened with him and Queen Mab?
Oh.
Look, I love Brad, but he's a fuck up. I love him, but I don't trust him to have my back the way I have his. Because he only cares while it's easy. Because he's only my friend until someone else he thinks is cooler comes along. Fucking Kevin. And that hurts.
Feeling like you're dispensable.
Yeah.
Funny. I suppose I thought that instant access to unlimited knowledge would make people more self-aware and considerate of the effect his actions would have on others.
Oh, he knows exactly what he could do to be a better person. But it would be hard and make him feel bad about himself, so he just doesn't do it. Instead, he hangs around with Kevin, who makes him feel like he's great already.
Well, that has depressing implications for the idea that society will get fairer in the future due to more and wider education.
Genuinely depressing. Why be a better person when Kevin will suck you off being exactly the way you already are?
Literally?
Not literally. They're both bizarrely homophobic, like even by the standards of our time in the 1960s, in case anyone forgot.
Isn't there some fish he could just lick to make him not be a racist or homophobic or a moral coward?
Well... there's Ralph, the giant isopod of moral certitude, but licking Ralph only makes you absolutely committed to the moral code you already have. People who lick him tend to get a bit genocide-y.
Oh.
And there's no fish of the one absolutely correct moral code.
Depressing.
Genuinely. Like, if magic could fix the really big problems, there wouldn't be problems.
Okay, we're good to go. All wrestled out, totally non-sexual. Kevin's on to come and be licked by your friend. Also, non-sexual.
Amazing. Thank you, Kevin. And thank you again, Ruth.
Bye, Gwen. I hope your problems turn out to be the magicable kind.
The remainder of a Hamiltonian pathway past the great big fuck-off fields later.
Finally.
Finally?
Do you see Queen Mab?
Over there.
Well, that's funny. She's painted her shell black. I wonder why... oh, no. No, 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 please. Not after everything we've done.
Human, I'm afraid we have bad news about your friend.
Professor Bravely?
We did our best, but we just couldn't feed him enough to keep him alive. It takes us a long time to prepare food. We don't have hands. But if it's any comfort, he was peaceful at the end. He died smiling, having spoken his last words. If envy can't mansard roof, then don't carrots.
What does that mean?
I was hoping you would know.
No.
I know, but the explanation doesn't make sense in a universe where colours don't make noise.
Human, are you all right?
No.
Would it help if I talked about tax law? Humans like tax law, right?
We tried so hard to make it in time.
I know.
But even with magic, we were too slow.
Sometimes that's how it works.
I'm not even sad yet. It just doesn't feel real. It just feels unfair. Like, this can't be how it works. But then the further I go, the more complicated I realize everything is. The further I go, the more problems I realize there are, even with magic solutions, which makes me scared for the future. Mine, everyone's. Maybe it's not going to be as great as everyone thinks, because none of our problems are as easy as everyone thinks, even with magic solutions. And knowing more won't necessarily make us better, because Brad's kind of a dick.
True. Brad is kind of a dick.
I would love to disagree, but, you know... Kevin, thanks. You big-hearted cunt. I know you love me.
But maybe that's also a reason to be hopeful, human. Because if we don't even know what the problem is, how can we know what the solution is? So us not seeing one doesn't mean there isn't one. As Albert Einstein said, if things seem hopeless, they're not. We're just stupid. So soldier on in the knowledge of our radical ignorance. The big black silicone one is my favorite, Emmy, but the purple ABS one vibrates, so there is no wrong answer.
That is comforting.
Right?
Yeah. Kind of, anyway.
So, let us raise a banana daiquiri to the memory of your friend, to the future, and to not knowing.
To not knowing.
That was Everything is Always Harder Than It Seemed by Dylan Coburn Gray. I hope these stories stay with you like haunting flashbacks of a literary trauma. It was performed in the Project Arts Centre in Dublin and was directed by Dan Colley, performed by Sophie Jo Wasson, Shane Daniel Byrne, Owen Quinn, John Doran, Eva O'Connor and Cameron McCauley, with sound design and composition by Kevin Gleeson and Cameron McCauley, and with editing by Kevin Gleeson. Go outside of this room!